This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick League Podcast, episode 514, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey, jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey, la la la, la 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 la, la la la, la 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 la. Santa's got a little friend, his name is Dominic, the cutest little donkey, you'll never see him kick. When Santa visits his paisans with Dominic, he'll be, because the reindeer cannot climb the hills of Italy. Hey, jingity jing, it's Dominic the donkey, jingity jing.
Hello and welcome to the iFanboy Pick Week Podcast, episode 514. Once again, my name is Ron Richards and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
You.
And on death's door, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, you're not so far from death's door yourself.
I know, but I'm inching back. I feel like I'm closer than Connor. So
right, and he's of course getting closer to death.
I think we can all agree that last week was rough, but we did it. We pulled through, Connor. We did. You know, we should be proud.
This show's gonna kill me.
that was me coughing, by the way. So it's a three-way.
Oh, hot. All right. So we are from the website ifanboy.com, and we like comics. And every week we read a stack of comics, and one of us picks the comic that we enjoyed the most and deems that the pick of the week. And then we come here to talk about that comic as well as some of the other comic books that came out and other fun stuff. It's always a good time because we all have similar interests and we're all friends here. Let's remember that. We're going to warn you, though. We're going to talk about what happens in the books as well as anything else that we might talk about. So consider this a spoiler warning. So be warned. Abandon all hope from here on out. This week, Josh had the challenging pick.
It wasn't just me, right? I mean, like, it was challenging.
No, I had a couple.
I had a bunch of good books.
Yeah, yeah. I could have picked one. Yeah.
So it's just sometimes you. We can just tell somebody something to make him feel better, and sometimes it could just make me feel like an asshole. It's totally fine.
I can relate to where you were this week. I've had similar weeks.
Yeah, I had a really hard time.
Okay, well, I decided to go with All-Star Section 8, number 6. Main reason, there's one page in it. This is the kind of week I've had. There's one page in it that made me laugh a lot. Like I was sitting in my living room. Everybody had gone to bed, and I'm mainlining comics as fast as I can because that's when I fit them in. And I just started laughing for a good 2 or 3 minutes. And you may remember when we talked about the first issue of this miniseries, when we brought up Dog Welder, we started laughing.
Because
Dog Welder. I mean, it's very funny. But further than that, like, I think that as we've gone through this miniseries, if you're not following along, Section 8, All-Star Section 8, it's a spin-off of some characters that were in Garth Ennis and John McCrae's Hitman series that ended. a good number of years back, probably at least 10 years ago at this point.
Longer than that, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. I think you're pushing on 20.
No. Early 2000s it ended. It was like 98 to whatever. Somebody look it up while I talk.
I will.
And they basically brought – there were these side characters that were like just a ridiculous, haphazard superhero team, which I referred to as villains when I interviewed Garth Ennis for some reason. I can't get over that. And basically this is bringing the team back. They were mostly killed in the comic book. So the leader is this guy, Sixpack, who's a little fat drunk who's disgusting. There's the demon Bator, who only says that he's Bator. Although in this he says other things. By the way, that was a stupid joke where he was supposed to originally master Bator. But then they just had to get rid of that because it was not a Vertigo book. It was a DC Universe book, which, by the way, is amazing.
So, just to chime in, issue 60 released on 2001. So, okay. So 15 years ago, let's say that.
14, we're going to say. So it's only 4 years off from what I said.
Okay.
I love that series. I actually didn't get to read it at the time. I read it sort of in parts, and I finished it eventually, and it was great. And so this was like, we're going to get to go back. And as we went through it, basically it's one of those things where each issue was a little bit of Garth Ennis talking about superheroes, and in specific some DC superheroes, but sort of he was doing his thing about superheroes, which is not concurrent with sort of the mainstream superhero fan view of superheroes, I think that we can be clear about.
He doesn't like them.
I think it's slightly more nuanced than that.
No, he's told us. He said in interviews he doesn't like superheroes.
All right, fair enough. But I feel like he's done it in a way that he's had some love for it. He understands it. He's not coming from it at it from an ignorant place. Somebody's just like, I don't like superheroes, and he's gonna do a job for some money. Although he's probably done that. But in this one. Basically, the end of the last issue, Superman showed up, and the whole time, Sixpack has been looking for an eighth for Section 8, because they only had the seven people on it. And they tried out Green Lantern and Wonder Woman and Batman, and all those things failed. And then Superman shows up. And there's an issue of Hitman that had Sixpack and Superman that was, you know, sort of a character moment for that character. And so this is sort of a throwback to that. Maybe it wasn't Sixpack, it was Sixpack was involved, but it was also Tommy Monahan, who was Hitman and Superman. So this is definitely related to that thing. And basically, the point of the issue is that this whole thing is Hitman. Sixpack worries that this whole thing that's going on here is all just part of his drunken delusion as he lies somewhere passed out in a gutter. And at the end, Superman's like, "So it's not so bad. Thanks for us." If you've done that. And I basically he's like, if that's what's going on, that's totally cool with me because I'm glad that I'm Superman and I'm glad that you're here. And if we're all just a delusion, and you know, he compared it to you know, other philosophical things that have said things like that. And it kind of just like, for me, it's just put everything into a perspective that's interesting. Like at the end of the day, I like the way that Garth Ennis thinks. And he stuck everything sort of into this context of, yes, it's ridiculous, but what's so wrong with that? Which is kind of what I got out of it. And there's the Dog Welder page that I'm talking about. This is not the first Dog Welder. If you had a handbook of the DC Universe, this would be Dog Welder 2. Mm-hmm. And he got a hold of the old – he was a family man who got a hold of the old Dog Welder's equipment. I want to make sure that I'm being clear who Dog Welder is. He's a character who welds dogs to – other dogs and things.
Just to be clear.
Which doesn't make any sense scientifically.
Because you weld flesh? Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the whole thing. That is actually what I like about it.
Right.
Anyway, so Dog Welder's been hanging out with him the whole time and not saying a lot. And this family pulls up outside, this sad family in their car, like, "We need you to come home, Daddy. Is it really you under the mask?" And it looks like he's about to do it. And the little kid takes his dog out and he goes, "And Scraps has missed you too." And he's just like a silent pause. And then you see the tip of the welding torch and just goes, "Psst." And you know that he's not going to go back. He is going to weld that dog. And
he's got pride in his work.
The sheer absurdity and anarchy of that and flying in the face of everything we've ever, you know, of most media that we ever get, it just made me laugh. And like, it's so wrong. And I like this, we are in a different age than when Hitman wouldn't have made it today is what I'm getting at. We're in a different age than then, but like Garth Ennis is still like standing here. He's like, I'm still going to do this thing. And this guy is going to abandon his family and he's going to weld this dog. And it's totally offensive. And for some reason that really, it's been a hard week. I don't know if you people have been reading the world, but like this bit of absurdist offensive humor was the thing I laughed at hardest and most out of this whole week. And I like, it's weird that I can say things like, yeah, I had the pick of the week when September 11th happened. And it felt a little like, like,
oh God.
No, I'm like, it was like the same thing. Like, I was like, at least comics are doing this for me. And at least Garth Ennis is there. And at the end, like in the middle of this miniseries, we thought maybe this shouldn't be. And now at the end of this, I'm like, I'm glad it was. I'm glad it happened. I was really happy to see John McCrae back doing these. And like his art style tends to evolve over time. And I think his art's actually nicer here than it was in Hitman. And I'm so glad that there's still a place, I guess, for Garth Ennis to like to work on this stuff and to have his sense of humor and to do his thing. And it was my favorite comic that I read this week, which isn't, again, we've said this, not the same as the best comic I read this week, but it was the comic that made me happiest. And even it wasn't even just the one page. Like I had things to say about the rest of it and I enjoyed it. And I like Superman hanging out with Sixpack and talking to him because there's definitely thoughtfulness behind it, even though it's ridiculous.
Well, this is why humor exists, right? This is why jokes exist.
Yes.
take the edge off. And
I like that. This is why humor exists. No, but well, it's true.
I'm glad we could get to that on this show.
Yeah. But I mean, this is why. I mean, when things are bad in the world, you read his books and you laugh and you feel a little better, and that's the whole point of them. I ultimately don't think there was a point to this miniseries, but it had its moments.
Yeah.
I like this issue probably better than most of them. I think in the middle I just didn't really.
And that might be part of it too. Like I was like, "Oh good, we ended on the one that I liked."
Right.
And that I wanted to like it. You know what I mean? So it's a lot that I did.
I'm also happy the Grappler hung himself cuz he was the worst character in the book.
Like I think that all of the things that you think as you're reading this, Garth Ennis is completely aware of.
Sure. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I'm happy it happened.
Yeah, me too. Basically,
he's not talking anymore.
So there's this character who, for six issues, the Grappler, who has a grappling gun. All these names are pretty self-evident, by the way.
And you love them, by the way, too.
I do. I really, really do. The Defenestrator, for example, old Section 8 member, he'd put you through a window. That's right there. So the whole time you see Grappler, who's just this character in a white outfit with goggles, that's really all it is, and he just kept saying, I'm the Grappler. It was super irritating. And in this, he just goes, you know what? Fuck this. And he hangs himself for no reason. Just like, and that's it. That's the end of that character's arc. I don't know. It really speaks to an absurdity that I was very much in the mood for this week. And I think you're right. I'm glad that character hanged himself. What? And please note I said hanged because people get that wrong a lot. That was a well actually for everybody out there.
All right.
All right, then. So, well, cool. Well, I'm glad you got some enjoyment out of a comic this week. So that's good. You found your joy. You found your moment.
This week in the patronizing response pick of the week. That's good for you. I hear a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
I hear that's pretty good.
And I get it. The Ennis McCrae thing is legendary, and I'm not reading this, but I get it. So.
Yeah. Cool. He welds dogs.
Welds dogs. All right, then. So, new issue of Prez came out.
Yes.
What do we think of that one?
Did you feel like you skipped an issue somewhere?
No. I do know that while I do like this series still, and I like the energy behind it, the moment she became president, I've become less interested.
You know, I don't agree.
That was like the second issue.
Yeah,
that makes
sense.
Yeah,
I feel like we did skip around somewhat. That might be just me, but about halfway through it, I stopped letting that bother me, and I was like, "Oh, we're doing a different kind of thing now." And I like her having to deal with these problems. I actually do like that a lot. And like I'd say, the first half of the issue, I was like, "I don't know if I'm not into this one." And then sort of by the end, I liked the. I mean, there's all this sort of balls to the walls political satire going on, but there was actually like a real solution that happened. Like it was, they had a problem. Right. They looked like they were backed into a corner, and it was really nice plotting. I thought basically the problem was that there's a cat flu, and everybody, and so the president has to take all of the cats away from people and round them up, and that makes everyone hate her. Because when you're president, no matter what you do, everyone hates you, or at least half of everyone. And the corporations, the medical corporations, were like, we will fix this problem, but we need to then, we want to then retain the ownership of DNA of everything and everyone. And like, oh no, what do we do? And they came up with a solution for that. And I really liked it.
And this is the final issue of the arc, which supposedly is coming back for a second volume. We'll see if it actually happens.
Yeah.
I hope so, because I feel like it's a different kind of book that's out there, and like I like that it's in my stack. I get excited when I see it.
I really like that it's being published by DC.
Right.
I really because A, it is related to DC's roots. I mean, Prez is a character going way back, and you know, we give them shit, and I want to make sure that we give DC credit for doing this. And I hope that people support it so that they keep trying to do this until they'll eventually just throw their hands up and go, fine, Lobo.
Right.
You know, this is an antithesis to that, I think.
This is what people complain about. You gotta read the books that...
Female protagonist, new creators, you know, edgy political satire.
Yep. Yeah.
It's good.
I agree. And I think it's good to, yeah, because everybody likes to shit on DC as much as they can. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons too. But yeah, the fact that this book even exists, and B, that they're giving it as much of a shot as they can, I think it does deserve credit.
It means that someone there, probably more people than we suspect, market forces being what they are, they listen, they care, and they want to try to the extent that they can.
Right.
You know. So support it if you can. You give it a try if you haven't. I mean, we don't all agree on things usually. So the fact that we all do means it's probably worth a look if you haven't yet.
Yeah. And I think part of my disinterest in this is just generally like politics is not one that I'm big on, but I do like satire, and I do like, you know, kind of the, you know, I just feel as if the series started off really absurdist satire and really kind of biting, and that I feel like that has declined as the series has gone on, because it's the story's moved on, and that's okay, you know. So I think if it maintained the pace of that first issue, I think we probably would have been tiresome. So it's probably right.
I think anything like this will wear out its welcomes at some point. Like,
exactly.
I something can be really good, and I can only want to read 6 to 12 issues of it. That might be all there is to it.
Yeah.
Right.
That has to be okay too.
Yeah.
Not everything goes on forever.
Yep. So speaking of not everything going on forever.
Another Daredevil number one. Daredevil number one from Charles Soule, Ron Garney. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about here.
Yep.
I like a lot that they just said, you know what? Forget that whole San Francisco thing.
Just everything. Foggy having cancer, like everything. Just forget it all.
Which was great. This feels like what I thought all the books would feel like after Secret Wars hasn't ended yet. But. Yeah. Yeah, but with this new Marvel, this is what I thought I was going to get, was these new directions and these characters.
You're saying this is what you felt like the books would have been like had this been at the end of Secret Wars?
No, it doesn't even have to do that at the time. This is this book, Doctor Strange, these feel like new directions, whereas a lot of the books don't, which is why I find myself confused.
Actually all new and all different, but
yeah, just all fresh starts. Yeah, you know, like just reset buttons pressed and moving forward, you know, with that. Yeah, so
I like that a lot.
That said,
you and I think are gonna have different opinions about this.
I think we all are.
Okay.
What are we gonna do first? Positive or negative?
Go negative so we can finish strong.
Okay. I hate the fact that the costume is recalling the TV show. Yep. As much as I love the TV show.
But again, that's the name of the game.
Yep.
And I can't decide if I hate the fact that they're drawing him to look like the actor or not.
Yep.
But again, I mean, like, this is the Hugh Jackman effect, and we are all just – we're going to have to accept it.
Yep.
It's actually not the Hugh Jackman effect, because that was 2000. This didn't happen until the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, this is the Samuel Jackson effect.
This is the Avengers effect.
Yeah, this is the Samuel Jackson effect, yeah.
Well, the roots are started.
And I actually – at first, I didn't like the fact that Matt's now a DA instead of a defense attorney, because I feel like that was a big part of the character. But I actually thought about it, and not kidding around. I actually thought about it for a little while, and you know what? It's okay. It'll be interesting to try different.
It's different, yeah.
Take on what does it mean to be a prosecutor and also a vigilante?
Yeah. I had the same instinct. I thought, well, we can keep doing the same stories over and over again, or see what this is like.
Yeah. Right. But other than that, I thought it was really fun, and I know Ron, you're going to talk about the art in a second, but I actually really liked the art.
All right, Josh, you go, and then I'll go. I'll finish up.
I think that we are going to be talking about the same thing.
I hate the D's.
Yeah.
I honestly take it as a given at this point that I'm not going to like most superhero costumes.
Yeah.
That are done in modern comics. That's fine. We can't keep harping on that forever.
Oh yes, we can.
I know, but I really, while I don't think that I loved Ron Garney's art, I actually really liked the boldness of sort of saying, let's try this style for a bit. I really like the dot pitched sort of like the texture that's put throughout the book a lot. I think the storytelling is strong. I like that it's Ron Garney saying, you know, well, look at this thing I can do. Yeah. I don't know that it's entirely effective or that I want to look at it for a really long time. But I admire, it's like the DA thing. Like I admire the, let's try this.
I like the style. I thought it was, you know, it's Garney doing a style that's still him, but it's a sketchier, darker style.
Yeah.
And I admire when artists will try different. Now, that doesn't mean, like, you know, we didn't like when Scott Collins tried the same thing, but I think this is more effective. I actually thought it was really, because Daredevil lives in a darker, sketchier world, and I thought that this sort of thing works well for it.
I think that, you know, it's the right thing to do at the end of the Wade Somni run.
Right.
And they didn't go full on, you know, Bendis, depressed Matt. It's sort of in the middle of the Wade Matt and the Bendis Matt. He's certainly more serious, but he's not like suicidally serious.
Right.
Which I liked.
I struggle with this because I felt as if, you know, I agree with you, a lot of you guys. I'm a huge Ron Garney fan, but I am not, and I like taking the bold chance, and I like, you know, like, and I like, you know, trying something different. But it just, the art just felt unfinished to me. It felt, I just got a rushed, unfinished sense to it.
Unfinished though. It's just that's the style. It's
I guess. So. But I feel as if it could have been done better. I don't know if that's fair to say. But
you just don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's fair to say it's unfinished. That sounds like
that's fair.
That's just how he's drawing it.
Yeah. But it's not just the drawing. I mean, it has to like the thing is, I like the dot pitch approach, and I like the experimenting with coloring and all the stuff like that. But just something about it just didn't really resonate with me. You know, like as much kind of as you said you wanted to, you know, this is what you expected or hoped to see out of all new, all different, and just kind of new, fresh starts. The person who's been reading Daredevil for the better part of 10 years and me hates the fact that it just forgot everything and there's no resolution or there's no like lots of.
I've been reading Daredevil for 25 years.
Yeah.
But like, and this is what you do, you start over.
Yeah.
They painted themselves into the corner with Wade's run, as great as it was.
Yeah.
Wade basically said, I'm going to write him to the end of his life.
Yeah.
Using these flash forwards, so no one can ever do anything with this character. So
right,
and so what you have, the only thing you can do in that is just start over and forget it. That's all you can do in comics.
Yeah, I don't know. This felt to me like, okay, maybe my time with Daredevil's at an end. You know, like
that's fair.
Yeah, which is fair. Yeah, no, which is like, and it began with Bendis. You know, well, it began with Kevin Smith and all this stuff, but I really, really got into it. Bendis's run and went all the way up until about halfway through Wade and Somni's run. You know, I feel like they overstayed their welcome and
it stepped through it all the way with Brubaker though.
Yeah, exactly. But and I feel like this felt more to me like what Daredevil felt to me before that time period, before Bendis and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know. I'll stick with it for a little bit just because I do like Garney.
Lobot shows up. Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. But just little things like putting his desk in an elevator shaft.
Yeah, that was
like
weird.
Like that was, I mean, that's just that
seems
like,
really unsafe.
It just seems really unsafe, and it's just like, it's just a cheap joke, you know, like it's like, well, he's blind, he doesn't care, you know what I mean, like, and it's like, I don't know, it just didn't hit the magical notes that I've had before. That's, you know,
it's not far off from the steam pipe trunk distribution venue West Wing, which I know Charles Soule is a big fan of.
Yeah, well,
I think he put him in the steam pipe trunk distribution venue.
It just seems unsafe. What if that elevator drops? Yeah. Oh, boy.
So I don't know. I mean, I did struggle with it. And again, I feel like, you know, while we talked about Charles Soule's writing and I think a lot of the stuff that he does for Marvel is very much, hey, we need someone to do exactly what we want them to do. And then he steps in and gives them exactly what they want. And in this case, you've got it written to be similar to the TV show and like very, all those, you know,
similar to that tone, which I don't love.
Right.
I don't want that as well. I mean, we were all so happy when Wade started on Daredevil. He was like, oh, good. It's not depressing.
Yeah.
And this is some, you know,
well, I don't dark think it's depressing, and, though.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if it's depressing. It's dark, but it's not depressing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's depressing yet. We'll see. So,
feels like it is, or it looks like it's supposed to be.
I don't know. I mean, I visually sure, but the character didn't seem that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I'm talking more visually, and I'm guessing that's lead into how it's going to be. So I don't know.
Well, you also have the thing where like as soon as Foggy showed up, he's like, "I'm done with this," and I was like, "They're already mad at each other."
That's the part I like the least.
Yeah, I don't like that. Well, you guys, we've talked about this a lot. I want the people to be friends.
Yeah.
Like, I want the hero to have his best friend who's there for him all the time. And I know that you have to have conflict in there, but to start off like that, like, he saved you from the cancer.
Also, there's going to be some sort of cosmic event that he wipes everyone's memory, apparently.
Jeez.
Did you catch that? He said, I know you left me the only person who can remember your identity. I was just like,
it's fine. Really?
Just have him just reboot it. Don't explain it.
Yeah.
They have to, though.
Oh, God.
I think that's like the costumes. That's the thing they're going to do.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll move it on. My pick of the week probably would have been Black Science number 18.
That was my second place.
Because, oh, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
He's like, James Robinson?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we've praised the amazing work of Matteo Scalera, and that continues. But what really stands out here is the real character deconstruction that Rick Remender is doing with the character of Grant McKay and going back into his past and executing it through a very awkward puppet show.
I don't know that I fully understood what was happening or why, but I got the message.
Oh, man. And I did like the little detail of the fact that the young Grant McKay analog in the puppet looks like Blackheart Billy with a little mohawk and whatever. It's just like, oh, Rick. It's just so, so transparent.
You know, before we get deeper into the story, I'd like to say just I'm so on the sort of medications, but there's a recap page in the beginning, which is great because bunch of other Image books came back this week that were gone for a few months, and I don't remember I couldn't tell you what was happening in them because I read a lot of comics and they've been gone for 3 or 4 months. Rocket Girl had been gone for like 6 months.
No, Rocket Girl's been gone for a year and a half. It's
right. There's no recap page. Yeah. And I was like, well, I just love this book, and now I'm going to drop it because I don't know what's going on, and I appreciate that Black Science has a recap page in it.
Yeah, well, that's something that I pushed for a lot when I was there. In fact, I also with Rick, I said, always put a recap page. Put it there. When you've got these characters in plain clothes without costume, you know what I mean? Like we know from reading it, you know, put a recap page. It helps. You know.
And Plutonia, which was delayed. I don't remember. You know, I was like, it took me half the issue to remember what had happened. Just put a recap page in.
Yeah.
Especially if you're delayed. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
But anyway, but Black Science number 18 is just it's the second issue in this new arc, and it was just fantastic. It was wonderful. So yeah.
Robin War number 1 of 2, because it's one of those events where they have a bookended miniseries around this is a Batman event, I guess, or a Robin event, and written by Tom King. This is a Tom King week again. You know, I will not believe that these things don't happen purposely. I know, Ron, you told me they don't, but I do not believe that one guy gets 6 books that come out in one given week. But so Tom King, and then let's see, where's the credits page? There is scrolling. Oh, here we go. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pencilers. 1, 2, 3, 4 inkers. I'm sorry, those are colorists. And then a breakdown artist.
Wow.
So for a big event, it looked really crappy, which was pretty terrible because it was really a good story. You just think that, okay, we're going to kick off this event. This is going to be a big deal. You know, we're elevating Tom King to, you know, he's moving up the ladder pretty quickly. We're giving him a event that's going to go across every Batman book, pretty much. And then they stick him with a bunch of guys who, you know, there's a couple. Carrie Randolph's good. He only has a couple of pages, and you got a bunch of guys whose names I've never heard of, and they're amateur to competent, you know, comic artists. And it really takes you out of the story when characters change wildly from page to page, and the art style changes wildly from in the scene itself, and it just feels like DC really dropped the ball on this event, which is fun. And which the Court of Owls decide they're going to kill all the Robins because there's too many of them, and they have all these the We Are Robin kids running around. There's more and more of them, and so the Court of Owls get one of their people in the city council to pass a law that it's illegal to wear a Robin paraphernalia. It's legal to wear Robin colors, and so then there's some parallels between what's going on in the world now, in which we see the police beating kids who are wearing just for wearing the color red, and tasing kids for wearing red shoes, and really really sort of emotionally affecting stuff. But then it's undermined by the art, which is pretty rough. So I'm going to actually follow this through the whole thing because I do enjoy what's being told here, which the owls are trying to take them all the Robins down. But God, it was really rough looking. Yeah. And I felt really bad. I felt really bad for Tom King. So if you like the Robins, it's good, but it's really hard to endorse it fully with the way it looks.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But,
well, actually, one thing I do want to note is that prior to the New 52, Dick Grayson was always, he put his Robin life in the past. He never talked about it. He never really liked to, I'm Nightwing now and I don't like to, still be Robin. But here he's basically embracing it. And in fact, the big moment at the end is when he escapes from his adventure and jumps out the window and says, I am Robin, which is something he never would have said, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. I always liked that. But Tom King's a really good writer. It's just, I wish they could have given him one solid artist to draw this book.
Rough. He's starting to cross into Charles Soule territory of number of things he's writing.
Well, it's like, look, new blood. Yeah. I mean, like, they're analogs to a way. And actually, he's kind of taking up. Well, you know what? They did different things. I don't think Charles would have done Robin.
Well, I'm not talking about what they would have done. Yeah. I'm just saying the volume of work. That's all. Yeah.
Well,
take it, we can get it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's all.
It's like, well, we can give it to Giffen.
Yeah.
Or, why don't we give Tom a shot at this? I think. It's interesting. Yeah. No, I think you're right. But I mean, yeah, it's like they're both right between like yeoman and headliner.
Yeah. They're ways to go before headliner.
Well, no, but it's been attempted, that Wolverine, the death of Wolverine. I mean, like, they've put him up there.
That did not go well, though.
Yeah, it wasn't horrible. It just wasn't great.
Oh no, that is reviled. Well, in fact, yeah.
I don't care what everybody thinks. I'm just talking about whether the story was any good. But
yeah.
But that was for different reasons too.
Yeah.
So moving along, I read Totally Awesome Hulk number 1. I didn't like saying that title to you just now. I felt like I was writing an emoticon, but it's fine. Totally Awesome Hulk number 1 by Greg Pak with art by Frank Cho. And
for now.
Whatever. I'll take what I can get. And I'm not even a huge Frank Cho fan, but I can't read his stuff without going, this guy can draw. And specifically, I get it, this guy can really draw girls in bikinis. I mean, he's really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel funny. No, so what you got here is a reboot of Hulk. Where Amadeus Cho, teenager, genius, eighth most genius person in the world, is now got the Hulk, and him and his sister are working together in a flying food truck, really hitting all the things there. And he's gonna keep Hulk under control because he's so smart, and they're taking care of. There's some sort of monster problem that's going on.
How is he the Hulk?
I don't know.
Doesn't explain how he's the Hulk.
If it did, then I didn't understand it. I don't think so. I don't think that feels like that's not a thing they explain in the first issue. They give you the first issue, be like, wait, what's going on here? And then later you'll get the explanation. I don't think they explained it, but they might have. But I barely know who Amadeus Cho is. I don't know what's been going on with Hulk, so I just sort of took it at face value. And I kind of liked it. Did either of you read this?
No.
Nope.
Okay. I liked that they wrote the character as a, like, when he became the Hulk, his teenage hormones get ramped up a ton. So he's always trying to pick up girls and get distracted. And even though he's a big genius, like, it makes him stupid. And it's really pissing his sister off, who's like his partner. So it was kind of, I don't know. I don't think I really expected that from Greg Pak. But he's done, I haven't loved everything that he's done over at DC. But the one thing I can give him throughout all of it was it's pretty interesting. And it's unique. Like, it doesn't sound like a lot of the, it doesn't read like a lot of the other things that are happening. So even though I have no, I used to never read Hulk at all. I don't know, you guys may remember this. Like, I used to hate, I don't like Hulk. And I try to jump on every time they redo it because I think there's been some fun things that have been happening. And I really enjoy it. I liked reading Frank Cho, at least for as long as he's going to be on there. I kind of realized as I was, I don't think I looked at the beginning, I realized as I was a little ways through it, I was like, oh, this is Frank Cho. That means it feels a little special, even though, even by you saying like, well, he won't be there long. Well, of course he won't be there. He's never been there long, but that's fine. Like it was kind of special reading. It was fun. I liked it.
So, and then over in the, in X-Men corner, it was a big week on X-Men. We had two releases, the first issue of All-New X-Men number 1 from Dennis Hopeless and Mark Bagley, as well as Extraordinary X-Men number 3. And real quickly on this, All-New X-Men number 1 is basically the young X-Men who are plucked from the past, minus Jean, and added in Wolverine, which is X-23, Idy Ankonuo, who I forget what her code name is, and Kid Apocalypse as like a younger team. Love the concept. Love this concept. Love the approach. Hate Bagley being on it. Hate.
Oh, I did read. I read half of this.
Yeah. Just
for that. And that was. I was like, I don't.
Yep. It was just like I love the setup. I love the pitch, and the execution just completely fell flat. Unfortunately.
Well, did you like the story?
It was all right. I mean, well, no, I don't, because then ties into either in this one or in Extraordinary X-Men number 3. I forget which one actually revealed it. I was flipping through trying to find it, but we can find out a little more about the fact that Cyclops attacked the Inhumans and died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like, there were the kids who were like the. And it was like the mutants in Dark Knight Returns kind of thing.
That's what's going on in this book. What I'm saying is that we found out a little bit more about what happened to Cyclops, which has been the thing I've been complaining about. Which I don't know if that's related to Secret Wars or how they, or if that's if they're doing this on purpose or what the fuck. But hate that. And then now you've got these little, you've got these, mutants who are adopting the Cyclops, you know, the X across
down
the eyes.
On the awful mask.
Yeah, it's
now
just,
more people have that stupid X.
Yeah, it's just not good. It just wasn't good.
I actually really enjoyed this. I mean, the art was what it was, but I thought story wise and character wise, it was really it was fun. It was fun, and I enjoy the fact that in Bagley's world, people still wear open button down shirts over T-shirts.
Right. And I have a question.
Yeah.
Is Bagley, has his work changed or have we changed or both?
No, we've changed.
You guys stopped liking him at the end of his Spider-Man run. I don't have a big problem with him.
You don't like it though. Like we used to, we liked it when it was Ultimate Spider-Man. I mean,
well, he really worked for that particular book. That particular
it worked.
Character.
Yeah.
And I don't
dislike him. I don't think he's the most,
I find it very uninspiring, I guess, is the thing. Like, so even if like the story was, I was like, I don't really like the story and the art go together. And I was uninspired to look at it on a thing that I'll admittedly, like, I don't know who most of the characters are and I don't really care. But I was like, I want to read Dennis Hopeless.
These are the characters you read and loved before. You know who all these characters are.
But I'm not totally super connected to it. Like,
yeah, but you know who they are.
Sure. Well, I didn't know. He was just talking about Edie and somebody or other.
Well, she was from the young X-Men book we all read that Jason Aaron wrote.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I dropped off.
She's like the main character of that book.
Yeah.
Yep. Edie, whatever. Yeah. So. But then Extraordinary X-Men number 3 has got a little more dedicated time between young Jean and old Wolverine, and I just love how it's just like, they're both saying, how did you get here? It's like, I don't know. Whatever. and then actually this is the issue where this is the book that explains where Jean says, Scott is dead, he attacked the Inhumans, it was bad, and like that's all we get, which just drives me crazy. It just continues to drive me crazy. But that said, I do like the exchange between these two characters who have always been tied together in some way, and now there's a huge age divide, and ideally they don't really know each other, but they do know each other, and now they've formed a bond, and they get pulled into the fray with Storm and the rest of the X-Men, so I don't know.
Well, Wolverine's got his young female sidekick now. I was thinking as I read it that, we really liked Lemire's Independent and Vertigo stuff a lot, and his DC stuff was sort of uninspired, his DC Comics superhero stuff, but I think he's really good on the X-Men. At least three issues in so far. I've been enjoying this.
I definitely think it's less about him as a writer and more about the hand he's being dealt by editorial. So
well, just some writers Yeah. I mean, we've seen this before, at least in the DC Marvel thing. You know, they are better with one set of characters than the other.
Yeah, and which is fair. Yeah.
I think so far he's shown in these three issues he's got a better handle on these X-Men characters than he's had on any of the DC characters he's written, except for Animal Man, which was really good.
Yep.
But I like this a lot.
Cool. All right.
Real quickly, if you want to help support iFanboy, you can go to iFanboy.com/support. The holidays coming very, very quickly. You've got a couple more weeks of shopping left. If you can do that through Amazon, go to iFanboy.com/support and click on the Amazon link to do your shopping. We get a little piece of that sale. You don't lose any money. Amazon does, and everyone's happy. It's a happy holidays for everybody. Another way to help us out is on that same page, you click on becoming a member, an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. Love all of our members very much, and we thank you for doing this. So you can also leave us a one-time donation via PayPal, which many people have been doing, I guess, for the holidays. It's kind of like a little holiday bonus. They've been doing that all at fanboy.com/support. And we thank everyone in this holiday time. Now, real quickly, let's run through some books. Spidey number one. Did either of you read Spidey number one?
Nope.
It's Robbie Thompson writing and Nick Bradshaw who drew that X-Men book we were just talking about, whose name I can't remember anymore. The Jason Aaron book.
School one.
Yes. And it's
X-Men School?
X-Men School, yes.
Sure.
School of X-Men.
I completely forgot about that series.
It was a great series. I just can't remember.
Remember it ended weird? Like it just sort of stopped? Anyway.
Probably ran into an event. Anyway, Spidey number one is this tale of Peter Parker as a young Spider-Man in high school. And that's my favorite Peter Parker, so I'm reading it and enjoying it, but it's weird. Like there's no fanfare to it. It's not like it's Ultimate Spider-Man. It just is. And they've made some bizarre minor tweaks to his costume. Like he's got these lines on his legs, these ribbings, and then his mask, the web doesn't go across his entire head. It stops at his face and his neck. So the back of his head is just red and it's weird. But this was fun. I mean, it's very movie influenced, and there's a little bit of Ultimate Spider-Man, like Gwen's, you know, that tough bad girl in high school. But the Oscorp stuff, you know, they go on a tour of Oscorp and they fight Doc Ock, and it felt very much like the Sam Raimi version. So I liked it though. The Nick Bradshaw art's great.
You like a classic Spidey story.
I like young Peter Parker in high school. Right. I don't think he should ever age really beyond that.
Yep.
So this is my Spider-Man.
This all right. There you go. Good. That's good to hear.
And also
#using, my Spider-Man.
Yeah. And they're using the class so far the sort of classic Green Goblin with, you know, the sock head hat and
cool.
You know, not mecha Green Goblin. So I like that.
Cool.
There you go.
Right.
Wanted to check in on the Vision number two. Last one was my pick of the week by Tom King, previously mentioned, who's playing both sides of the aisle, you may notice. And I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I wouldn't have made it my pick of the week. But the weird things that I liked about the last one and sort of the exploring that he's doing in terms of what these visions are. I didn't like saying that sentence. Is interesting and compelling to me. And I still think the art is fantastic. So.
I liked this one more than the first one.
Yeah?
Yeah. This was fun.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
That's all. I want to check in. So if you said, well, you liked the first one, what did you think of the second one? I like the second one?
Yeah.
Still with it.
Yep.
More Tom King with The Sheriff of Babylon, number one, a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
About a murder happening in the Green Zone in Iraq.
In 2003. Four.
And I thought this was wonderful. This could have been my pick of the week. Mitch Gerrard's on art, mm-hmm. who is perfect for this kind of story. And Tom King has worked for the security services in some capacity, so he has supposedly some experience in what's going on here. It felt very authentic.
Well, he wouldn't tell us a long time ago, but it sounds like he's being a little more open about it now. So I
liked
it. I think I need to give it another read because it was really, really very dense.
Yes.
But I liked it. It was a good start, and it's really good that we're starting to see some quality things come out of Vertigo again.
Well, speaking of which, Unfollow number two. After reading Unfollow number two, right after reading The Sheriff of Babylon, I was like, all right, I feel good about Vertigo right now.
Right? Yeah. Right.
So I liked Unfollow number two a lot.
I did too, and it was
more than the first one.
It was different than the first one. The first one was a lot of random setting up stuff that we didn't know was going on, and we got introduced to some very strange characters through this one, and I don't quite know what to make of the story yet. But I feel like, oh, this is going to be a really fun reveal. As we get to it. And, you know, just it was only based on the Royals book that they had last year. Like, I kind of trust the writer to Rob Williams, right? To give us to give us an interesting setup when this all sort of comes together. So I'm looking forward to it, which is nice.
Yeah, I think a story of next year, as we look to next year, I think is going to be the resurgence of Vertigo. I think that's going to I think they made some key editorial hires, you know, over the summer. And I think we're starting to see that come to fruition now. So it should be interesting. So watch.
I will.
So Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin are back.
Dropped another book on us after the end of The Private Eye, one of our favorite books of the last year. They dropped Barrier Number One on us, which is a 5-issue, or maybe 6, depending on how it goes, miniseries that is set on the border between the U.S. and Mexico. And at first, it seems very sort of a straightforward story about life on the border and the tensions and all the things that go along with that. And then an alien ship shows up and it abducts a ranch owner and a guy who was a Mexican trying to cross the border. So this is going, but it was good.
Yeah, this was. I was like, oh, apparently I should have taken Spanish, as half the book is in Spanish. But according to BKV in the afterword, you don't need to know Spanish. I mean, it probably helps, but I was able to get the story, you know, which is an interesting challenge, which is, can you use another language in a comic and still get it across somebody who doesn't know that language? And they were able to.
Rucka did that back in Queen and Country, I remember.
Yeah.
This was a lot of Spanish, and I haven't taken no Spanish in my life. So
a lot of Spanish, yeah. Yeah, so.
But it came across in the art. It came across.
Bold New World. I like that as an experiment sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is what comic art can do. Let's see if we can break this language barrier, which I like.
And I thought, actually, there was a sequence right before the left turn at the end of the book. There was a sequence of paralleling the two main characters as they were getting closer to each other. That was just like comic book magic. That was just like what you had was on the woman on the left and the guy on the right, and you had a big panel in the middle. And then you're watching like time pass and what they're doing, and that the section in the middle is getting smaller until ultimately they cross paths. And which I thought was really good. That was really strong. So.
And also the way they introduced the characters by showing them their face, and they got like a title card, and then it pulled back and it showed where on the map they were. I thought that was a really nice,
especially as you
swipe through it, it's a nice effect. This was really good.
Yeah, it was very good. I mean, and an interesting follow up to The Private Eye, which was what it was in and of itself, and you know, something in a different direction, and it didn't feel more of the same. And I liked it. It was of course, because these guys are pros, so it's good. Yeah. I wanted to mention, I failed to mention when the first issue came out, but the second issue of Citizen Jack number 2 came out, and this is Sam Humphrey's creator-owned book, and it is kind of a political satire, you know, in the same category as Prez.
Yeah, why are you talking about this?
Yeah, hate political satire.
I do, but so art's by Tommy Patterson.
Tommy Patterson.
Yeah, which is it's a very in the Nick Patara, Frank Quitely school, you know, kind of art, Chris Burnham, you know, like Jeff Darrow, kind of that world. And this is just like big and bombastic and a little crazy, and I like that. So
it's really weird that it's not a Vertigo book.
Yes, yeah.
This feels like a Vertigo book to me in a big way. I like it. I don't love it.
Yep.
It keeps me interested enough, but it's definitely good. I kept thinking this was Nick Spencer for some reason in my head. Like it feels like him to a certain extent, but it's Sam Humphries, which is a little different.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep reading it.
I've been impressed by the first two issues, so I think everybody should check it out. So, and then wouldn't be an episode of iFanboy if we didn't check into Star Wars Corner. And Star Wars 13 from Jason Aaron and Mike Diodato continues the Vader Down!
Vader Down!
crossover.
So is this the first new artist since Eminem is gone?
Well, Diodato did the first issue of Vader Down, which I think was the transition. This is the first non-Eminem issue of Star Wars.
Down.
Yeah, so.
Right.
And I would like Eminem to come back, please, soon, because I don't want Diodato.
That being said... It's a really fun issue. I really like this little event.
What, the
Vader Down?
I love that you're on board with the Vader Down.
It's really fun.
This is fun. But this we had a nice little face off between R2 and the
E.T.
Yeah, the assassin astromech droid. I thought that was very funny. That had some good humor.
I like that. I was like, oh, good, they're destroyed, and then I was like, oh, they're not quite destroyed.
Yeah, not at all. So,
but. it's fun. Like, if you've been sitting here listening to us, like, whinge about stuff for such a long time,
yeah,
this is us going, this is stupid and fun.
Exactly. And exactly.
Totally
yep.
fine.
Yep. So, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Here's your Star Wars corner.
Yeah.
Rules.
All right. So, that was right. That was a lot of books for this week. Whew.
I had 25 books.
Yeah. I had like 20, I think. So, at the end of the day,
it's a lot of books.
The center cannot hold.
Yes.
When you read 15 books and realize you still have another 10 to go, it's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up for this week's books. We want to hear from you, the audience, and we got a great voicemail from Ryan from Minnesota, who's got a question about the upcoming holidays.
Hey, this is Ryan from Minnesota. Got a quick question about the holidays coming up. Wanted to get my dad and mom some comics. I know you guys have been asked this before, but my dad, big DC, longtime DC fan, loved Superman, loved the Metal Men. So any recommendations for him? Doesn't have to be superhero. He's also a big fan of Stephen King and Joe Hill, so kind of that horror kind of genre too. My mom, she really is up for anything. She really does like just about kind of any genre. I actually got her the first volume of Southern Bastards for her birthday, and she really enjoyed it. So I think she really does like just about anything. So, any advice would be great. And thank you guys so much. I absolutely love the show. Thank you guys so much.
Well, it sounds like Ryan's got the best parents in the world.
Apparently. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
So for Ryan's dad, if he likes Stephen King and Joe Hill, the obvious answer is to get him Lock and Key.
And as well as the Stephen King Marvel books, right? The Dark Tower and all that stuff?
Or the first volume of American Vampire.
I assume that since he said Stephen King and Joe Hill, he knew about those, though. But
I guess I don't know.
No,
he
I was thinking Joe Hill and Gabriel. Is it Gabriel? Gabriel Hernandez? What's his name? The one who did Lock and Key.
Gabe Rodriguez, yeah.
Rodriguez. Sorry. Those are good. Or Joe Hill did some Cape comics, and there's a bunch of spin-offs of those that were done by Joe with his friend Jason Ciaramella. Those are actually really good. They spanned a couple of eras.
Is that
yeah. Yeah.
I would go for the first volume of American Vampire, but that Stephen King co-wrote with Scott Snyder, which was with quotes.
Yep.
Really, that was really good. Or for old DC, or not old, but for DC sort of classic. I don't know about stuff with Metal Men in it, but I was looking at my shelf yesterday. You can't go wrong with JLA Year One from Mark Waid and Barry Kitson.
Ooh, that's really good.
For an old DC fan, that sort of spans the globe.
I mean, has he read New Frontier? I know that's a super.
There you go.
I mean that
New Frontier or JLA Year One.
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe Wednesday Comics. Get that big book. Is that still?
Actually, there's a Metal Man in there.
Wednesday Comics. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Oh, look at that, Josh.
So I thought I didn't have any answers for anything recent, but I was like, oh, we get to go back? Let's do this.
Yeah, we could do that. That's easy. For his mother, we want to keep on the Jason Aaron tip with Southern Bastards. If she hasn't read Scalped, give her Scalped, or maybe give her the new Lady Thor and see what she thinks of that. You know?
Or any of his myriad books.
It's hard to say because Southern Bastards is just like, well, she likes that, so then she'll pretty much
She's a friend.
Like anything.
Yeah. As you said,
like that. This is a man called Garth Ennis. Here are his works. Really?
Well, yeah, true. Preacher, go with Preacher.
Faster than read Preacher, which will become suddenly very timely.
Actually, you know what? Preacher is great because if she's okay with sort of the deconstruction of the South and religion and stuff and Southern Bastards, then she's probably okay. Although Preacher gets really out there.
Yeah.
In terms of give her the first couple of volumes, the first two volumes of Preacher. If she likes those, then you're in.
And if you
really do have the coolest mom in the world.
I agree.
And if you don't want to go in the gritty direction, I mean, Minnesota, Great White North, it's just over the border, but pick up the Essex County collection by Jeff Lemire. And that, like, you know, there's a lot of snow in that, and there's a lot of snow in Minnesota. So I don't know.
Listen, she's up for anything. The graphic novel I'm excited about right now is Our Expanding Universe by Alex Robinson.
Yeah.
Which is just, for me, just saying I really like Alex Robinson's work because it's good. So
there you go.
Read that.
Cool. There you go, Ryan. You can give try to those things, and if you feel like you want to help us out, you can go to fmbo.com/support, and you can pick up those volumes via Amazon. They're all collected there.
Buy them on Amazon. Cool.
If you do end up giving any of these to your parents, please shoot us a follow-up email. I'd be very curious if your mother speaks to you after reading Preacher.
Yes. Then
we are not responsible for any decisions you make.
Not responsible at all.
So if you want any last-minute holiday gift-giving ideas, you can email us at contact at ifanboy.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, like Ryan did. He was very good. He told us who he was, where he was from, and he kept it. Yeah. 30 seconds a minute is still it was good email.
I feel like 30 seconds to a minute is that's the sweet spot. So good job.
Right.
So, yeah.
So before we head out for this week, we want to talk. It is the end of the year, and we used to do on that website. We used to do all these end of the year lists: the best creators, the best books, the best artists, writers, everything. We used to break it down. Obviously, we don't do that anymore. But we thought we shouldn't let the year pass without talking about some of the people we do like from the year. Some of our favorite. We're going to do creators this week. We're going to do our favorite books next week. And just sort of a general discussion, who we thought sort of in our top five. This is by no means binding, legally binding, or morally binding. This is just our sort of top five.
What list. Is something that would be morally binding?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I'll run down who I have in my top five list. And this is
I think we should just say the top five list without any explanation. And just read off 15 names and then say, okay, good night.
it was hard to pick. I went through all my picks of the week from the whole year, and I looked around on my iPad and all the books I'm reading right now. And, it's always hard to pick, narrow down to five because there's so many good people. But I started off with Mark Miller on my list because
good one.
This year, everything he's done has been something I've responded to in some way or another. Then I had Greg Hinkle.
Wow.
Who... from an art standpoint, really, I could not stop looking at Airboy. I thought it was a wonderfully drawn book, and you always love when a guy blows up on you like that, a new guy who you've never seen before, just wows you every time every new issue. And so by that same token, I have James Robinson, his collaborator on Airboy. It's really hard to talk about the best stuff this year and not talk about a guy like Robinson just coming back and just knocking it out of the park with that miniseries.
Yeah.
And then Jason Aaron, who I think is probably my number one writer. I don't read everything he puts out. He puts out so much stuff, and I don't read it all. But the stuff I do read is
Star Wars,
Star Wars, and Thor. But the stuff I do read is among my favorite books currently going. And then finally, I wanted to mention Tim Sale because he's a guy we haven't seen in forever, and his work in Captain America White has just been spectacular this year. So. So those are my unofficial top five creators for the year.
Cool.
I'll go ahead and call mine official. I'm not worried about that. Bring it.
All right. So bring it, Josh.
My challenge here, of course, is a little bit like I was trying to look at writers and artists. And writers, you have like, oh, they did all these things. And so part of the strength is look at all the things they did. And then with artists, you go, well, they just did that one thing. And was that really good? And then you have to drill down. So that was my challenge there a little bit with that. I'm leading off with Jason Aaron. Pretty much the same. I think I read all the books, and I'm just so.
Well, you're just a bigger fan of his than aren't you?
I'm just so impressed by the.
By yourself.
By myself. By the variance that's available in that work. I think Southern Bastards is probably the best out of all of them, but it's also the closest to the thing that he did for years, which was my favorite series for years, Scalped. So there it is. Stuart Immonen. When he didn't do a ton, but when he showed up on Star Wars, he should do Superman again. Every single page that he drew, I was like, there is nobody better than Stuart Immonen, period. The end, there just isn't. He's such a consummate comic book artist. And I have, what's the name of the book? He's got another book, the graphic novel that I keep, the Red Olive to something or other. I'm going to get that really soon and read it because I've been rushing Olive to Red King. That's what it was. It's a book that came out this year. James Robinson. Just for being really, really brave and showing up with, I don't want to call it a second act, but again, just a bombshell of like, look at what I'm doing here with one of the boldest sort of things I've read in a long time with Airboy. Declan Shalvey. I think is an artist who is, I'm not going to use the underrated, but I think that he's an artist's artist. I think that there's a reason that Warren Ellis is working with him over on Injection. I think his storytelling is so well thought out and excellent. Here's a guy who I'm going to keep using ink on paper and everyone else can go to hell. And I think that every time I see his work, that it's improving. And he did There's an action sequence in one of the issues of Injection that was just, it was a clinic on action storytelling. And it always sticks out of my mind is, oh, that's exactly how you do it. And he did that while making it look really good at the same time. Boy, my alternate to fifth spot thing is really hard. But since Connor already said Mark Miller, I'm gonna nod at that and say, yeah, you're right. Similarly with Remender and Brubaker, and of course Mateo Scalera from last year. So I'm gonna go with Darwin Cook.
Ah, fuck.
Because, you know,
damn it.
He's got a new series that he's doing, a series written by somebody else. We haven't seen that in a while. And he is he's the best cartoonist in mainstream comics, period. Yep. Style and storytelling and I'm talking about the work. Every time the work comes out, I check all those alternate covers from last year actually came out in December, so I guess those are not in in consideration for this, but you know, when he does a cover, when he does anything, it's stunning across the board. And I'm really glad to be getting an ongoing series. I don't even care what it's about. I just want to look at it.
God damn it.
All right. So I'll go. It's hard to narrow these things down to five and all that sort of stuff. And I don't think there's a single name that you guys have said that I don't disagree. And in fact, we have some crossover. But for me, at the top of the list is like you guys, is Jason Aaron, in that, looking back at my pull lists and what I got each week, I'm pretty sure every week consecutively for like the past 4 months, there's been a Jason Aaron book that has been like the first book I've read and the one I've enjoyed the most. And whether it's, you know, the range between Southern Bastards to Star Wars to Thor to Thors to, you know, to all the stuff that it's to Doctor Strange, you know, like he continues to show to be one of the most versatile and, you know, well executed, writers. It's amazing. And then that's followed up by a long, 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 long time favorite. We talked about it earlier, but Rick Remender. I don't know any other writer who pours as much of his heart out onto the page as he does, and not, you know, in a consistent manner that is worth reading every time he does it. And now that he's successfully moved on from Marvel and is focusing on his creator-owned work between Low and Deadly Class and Black Science, it's just such a great little like corner of the universe that he's building for himself, and it's just great to watch. Two names as one entry, but technically two names. But the ongoing collaboration of Kieran Gillen and J.B. McKelvey continues to be my favorite, and this is not a surprise. You know, it's.
I was totally trying not to do that, and yeah. I was like, I didn't, because I would be cheating. But I'm looking at you. I'm going,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? I mean, and
it's fine. There's
a long history for Ron bending the rules on these things.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So there you go. But I mean, I could talk about Kieran's work, then I can talk about Jamie's work. But really, what it is the two of them working together, and you know
the
what
you sauce.
Yeah, and what you've seen is you've seen the continuing of the Wicked and the Vine being a powerhouse of an indie book. It's like one of the top selling independent books out there. And then the revisiting of Phonogram and adding to the mystique of that world, and like and doing it like one upping what they've previously done is not easy, and they continue to be a team that is a blast to watch what their output is, but also fun to see what they do together. And the fact I was talking about this in the comic book store the other day, the fact that this year seems to have been a year of experimentation and taking risks and challenging themselves this year, I think is even better. Makes it even that much sweeter. And then finally, similar to you, Connor, like I wanted to think of a new creator or somebody that really wowed me, and unfortunately, I didn't really see it that much this year.
Hinkle was the closest I came.
Hinkle is the closest, but I knew I've known Greg for years, so I know, that's why.
It's tough with four issues. This is the artist thing. We're like.
Yeah, but that said, I want to give a nod to Jason Latour, who, the combination of drawing Southern Bastards and killing himself with every issue, and admittedly, I have a little inside knowledge in that I've had long conversations with him about what that book means and how, like, when he looks back on his career, those hardcovers of Southern Bastards are what he wants to represent his career, and so that kind of, adds, added gravitas to each issue, but also what he's been doing on the writing side and you can't ignore the phenomenon of Spider-Gwen. What it's been doing for comics fandom and you know, and a corner of the Marvel universe that is you know was came out of nowhere and is strong and vital. And what was a throwaway one issue kind of thing has now become a force, and I got a lot of respect for that. So I throw a nod over to Latour. You know, because this past year he's been killing himself for his art, which I think is you got to respect. So. So yeah, those are my five, and then, of course, always Darwin, just always Darwin.
I'm gonna elevate Darwin to chairman emeritus status. He's just
it's kind of there.
Yep. So
damn it.
Listen, and I'm gonna go ahead and just to confirm, I tried really hard to think of a woman that I could put on this list.
Yeah,
I did, and I you know, there's lots of good things, probably more than ever. Closest I would come is Fiona Staples.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, did that work really speak to me like this other work did? No. So I'm sorry, but
yeah, I think there's a lot of groundwork being played, and there's a lot of people doing great stuff. I mean, like I have a ton of respect for Kelly Sue DeConnick and her work ethic, and how she and both Matt Fraction have thrown themselves into their own work and their creator own work.
Not even work ethic. She's turned herself into a brand.
Yeah, exactly, which is just amazing. You know, you can't ignore what G. Willow Wilson's done with Ms. Marvel. You can't, you know, like there's a lot of good stuff going on, but unfortunately, none of it has fallen into my kind of wheelhouse. You know, so. But I'm excited for what next year yields. So yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
So there you go. Next week we'll talk about our favorite books. We'll try not to forget the obvious ones, and then we'll wrap it up.
Airboy.
Yeah.
So right, there's your hint about next week. All right, you're gonna hear a lot about Airboy.
Yeah. So talk about wrapping up. Connor, can you handle the rest of the show, or do you want us to?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay.
Let's do the schedule first, since we just talked about next week. So we have two more picks of the week. Episode 515 will be next week, coming out on December 13th. Episode 516 on the 20th, and that'll be it for the year. And we'll take our break, and then you'll get a Star Wars: The Force Awakens podcast probably around the 22nd, 23rd. That'll as soon as we all see it and get together to talk about it. And then the following Sunday, you'll get the year-end all-media special, which we talk about everything we loved about the year other than comics. And then the Pick of the Week will return January 10th. And then the Floater Jessica Jones show will probably come out next week. Tentatively, we're going to be recording it very soon and getting that out to you. We're just waiting for some.
I have finished watching it. And David Tennant yelling, "Jessica!" has been in my head for about a week now, and I would like it to get it out, please.
Boom!
So you'll get that Jessica Jones show probably next week. So
Jessica!
Thanks, Ron. Thank you.
He does it a lot. I'm just saying. It's a lot.
that's like me and Luther.
Yeah.
Alice!
So, and if that isn't enough podcast for you, if you need to hear us on a daily basis, we urge you to go check out Goodfellas Minute, our sister podcast over at goodfellasminute.com, where we're analyzing the Martin Scorsese picture, Goodfellas, 1 minute at a time. And we've also had an absolute blast. This past week, we had Chris Radke from geek.com on, and took some interesting detours, but had some fun. Be sure you go and listen to episode 55 if you want to laugh. And then, you know, it's coming out every day.
I was on the Star Wars Minute this last week also.
Oh, yeah, you were. Yes, you were.
The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
So there's two things to go check. If you can't get enough of us for some stupid reason.
Yeah, exactly. So check all that stuff out. But if you still can't get enough of us, go to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this show. Let us know who your favorite creators are for the year. We want to hear from the whole iFanboy community as to what creators really made your comic reading special in 2015. And also talk about this week's books and any other comments you might have. As always, you can follow us. Go over to facebook.com/ifanboy and give us a like. And you can follow us on Twitter @ifanboy. And if you really, really, really can't get enough of us, you can follow us individually on Twitter. Josh is @JAFlanagan, Connor's @CSKilpatrick, and I'm @RonXO.
And if you like this show, you should go to iTunes, where you can write a review, or you can write a review of Goodfellas Minute, or you could write a review of Star Wars Minute, or really of any podcast that you really like. In addition to supporting them directly, like we had mentioned before, one of the other things you can do is to give them gravitas and to give them meaning. So somebody look and go, boy, that is a lot of 4- and 5-star reviews. This must be worth my time. This is something that sticks around, and that is meaningful. So that's a really easy way that you can do that. And it, you know, it's a season of giving. Let's get on it. Other thing you can do is just make sure you use your voice, whether it's social media or otherwise, to let people know about this show or other shows that you like. If you like this one, you know, maybe somebody was listening to the show and they dropped off because they don't read comics anymore, which is totally fair. But maybe let them know about Goodfellas Minute. Maybe let them know about that kind of thing and do that kind of stuff, because you guys always are the ones who are really leading that charge, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. So we made it, guys. Connor, you're still alive, well. Right?
Yep.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week then. We're going to let Connor
go. Quick question. If I had died in the middle of this, would you guys have kept going?
Yep.
Yeah, I think we have to. I mean, I think it's what you would have wanted.
Well, here's the thing. Would we?
Wait, I don't mean with the show, like the episode.
Yeah, the episode. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it depends. Do we think that you? Do we know that you had died, or we think that you might have dropped off Skype?
Well, you just hear me go like thunk into the microphone.
As long as Skype didn't drop the call, I think we would keep going.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you got to edit.
Right.
And do you finish the year, and then decide if you're going to continue the show, or?
Well, again, it's what you would have wanted.
Oh, I said no.
I said no. I think we would have.
No explanation. It would just disappear. What happened?
Connor would have wanted. Connor would have wanted us to continue.
That's, you know what though. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. So
like if like Ghost Connor, Blue Glowing Force Connor would be like, it's on the schedule.
Just because I'm dead doesn't mean you can stop.
Do it. Look at it.
Actually, I would just enjoy watching you guys bitch about having to do it. That'd be my favorite part of it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, until next week, I'm still alive.
All right. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I thought that was my song.
It's Dominic the Donkey, jingity jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La 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 la. Hey, Dominic, want another dollar?